And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms or restrictions apply.
Tomorrow I'm gonna wake up and become a more capable person than I have ever been in my life, with no effort on my part.
Just gonna happen.
Tomorrow I'm going to magically be able to do things that I have never been able to do, like make a schedule and stick to it, finish stuff.
Good morning, sweet world, and welcome to the No Dunks Podcast on the Athletic Network. It's Thursday, April 21st. I'm J.E. Skeets, and alongside me here in the yard, that's Tass Mellis.
What's up, everybody?
What's up, Tass? We got a Top Shot Hot Boy riding high this morning. It's Trey Kirby.
Hey-o!
Hey-o! The international man of mystery taking it to the max, Lee Ellis. Lily. And last, certainly not least, no, super producer JD.
Hello.
There he is. Here we are. Shout out to the stream team joining us live right now on YouTube. Subscribe, like, comment, share the show. Do your part. Go to nodunks.com, too, if you want to get your No Dunks merch. Get very, very, very close to releasing some new t-shirts as well as some new jerseys. Those are coming down the pipeline. So go to nodunks.com for that stuff. Email in your NBA questions to nodunks@theathletic.com. And, of course, follow us across all the social media channels. I'll be honest, guys. I had no idea with which game to start with today. I really didn't. I think you can make a fair case for all three of these. But in the end, I wanted to rip the Band-Aid off, cry our tears, and then move on to the joyous Bulls win and the Celtics-Nets game that we'll get to later. So we'll start, Tassie, with Joel Embiid hitting a three in overtime as the 76ers beat the Raps for the dominant 3-0 series lead.
Homer. Your team just got bamboozled. You, Homer.
Bamboozled.
Says the guy that had them devouring the other team.
Well, I had the devouring part.
The nerve of this guy.
I had it around the wrong way.
The fucking nerve of you. You're already pissing me off. But yeah, Tass and B with a monster three there. With about 2.5 seconds to go in overtime, he splashes it. Biggest shot of his career, and the Raps are in some trouble.
Oh, yeah. You want to go back to the first game of the night? I want to go back to earlier this season. This is what should have happened with the Toronto Raptors this season. Freddie All-Star should have never played in that All-Star game. He should have pulled a Jimmy Butler and said, no, thank you, because ever since that game, he hasn't been right. Goran Dragic should have been convinced to be on this team. Do you see that slog of an offense yesterday? Well, did you see him for the Nets yesterday? He would have helped out so much. That guy is scoring like crazy over there. And what is Marc Gasol doing in Spain? Tending to his tomatoes, making sure they're not bruised? He should be taking bruises from Joel Embiid in the lane. Let's get to Joel Embiid. This was, the greatest shot of his career, 33-13. He brought this team back because this Raptors team won this game in the first half, and it felt like, you know, they obviously punched the Sixers first, and it felt like they were going to win this game. I'm about to cry some tears over here. But Embiid came back. Embiid's third quarter was obviously phenomenal, yeah. But then he showed the whole arsenal at the end. Because the Raps didn't put their foot on the throat of the Sixers, you saw some amazing Embiid shots. That spin at the free throw line in OT, that was Akeem-esque. Just the dexterity of that dude, the footwork, the big block on OG earlier in the game, the big jam in the third. Now, people want to talk about, obviously, the game winner and that there was no inbounder in front of Danny Green, which was kind of odd. So Danny Green, an easy pass. There was no obstacle in the way to give it to Joel Embiid. And that was strange because there was a miscommunication because Fred VanVleet went to go be in front of the inbounder, like every other time an inbound happens. But Nick Nurse said, no, get under the rim. There's 0.9 seconds left. So that's just where you should go, because we don't want a lob. Obviously an incredible shot by a 7-footer, and I don't care if Doc Rivers came across the midcourt line to call for a timeout. If the refs can't hear him, I think he should be able to go wherever he wants. I don't care if there's a coach's box. Is that how you want to win the game, Toronto Raptors fans? A coach getting called for a technical foul? F that noise. They lost the game earlier. Of course, people are going to point at Achiuwa's missed two big free throws with 25 seconds left in regulation, but he had a great game. 20 points, 9 of 11. If you want to be a Raptors optimist, young Achiuwa showing out in a playoff game against the Beat, got to be happy about that. Or people point to OG Anunoby missing that free throw at the end of overtime. But come on, let's be an optimist. 28 points, great game for OG. Where they lost this game was Fred, going back to his second half of the season. He had 3 shots in this game. He only had 12 points. And Pascal Siakam, if he's an All-NBA player, he hasn't been that in the first 3 games, and obviously in the second half of game number 3 here. He had 12 points at half, and he didn't score in the second half. The Raps played a great game, but they needed their stars to be star-like. Fred's kind of got an excuse, but he's getting beat up on the defensive end too. The knee obviously is not helping there. Tyrese Maxey is blowing by him, and Siakam just wasn't himself. So I think that's where they lost the game, and MB just stole it at the end. And I don't feel terrible about it, because it's like the Raptors didn't play their best game, and the Raps just weren't there in the end. Skeets, not sure how you feel about Embiid doing that, but he was the best player, so I didn't mind seeing that dagger of a shot in a way.
Like you said, he did all the work there in the third quarter. He had that 12-point burst, and it got them back in the game. The Raptors outplayed the Sixers in the first half. It was nice to see on the first Philly possession, they actually doubled Embiid on the block. They forced a turnover. They created a lot of turnovers in this game. They did speed up Embiid at times. But as the game went on, yeah, he just showed like the difference maker of having a guy that's playing at an elite level. I mean, he's playing at an MVP level, of course, over the last 2 seasons here. He just took over the game. Absolutely took it over. And then they're right back into it. And yeah, they hit that huge shot, huge 3. What a weird whole sequence there where, you know, they have a shot there. It's tied. I guess it's Precious, right? That pokes the ball out. It goes basically right to half court. And then the whole Doc running over to scream timeout. I mean, he saved it. He really saved it. Who knows like what happens if it goes to double overtime, whenever, who wins and stuff like that. But like, just to give them a chance, hell of a call by Doc. You know, we shit on him all the time. We, you know, are always perplexed with some of his decisions. He's blown 3-1 leads, so now he can blow a 3-0 lead. I'm excited about that. But it was just amazing. He gave him a chance, and then the play call there. Tobias Harris says he set the greatest pick of his life. He wants the credit for the shot. That's like me in our pickup runs when I set a good pick for Trey Kirby to score running into the lane. I'm like, hey, give me some credit for that big pick there. But yeah, what a... I mean, he splashed it too. I mean, it wasn't lucky. There was nothing. Just it's amazing to see a 7-footer just smoothly turn around and basically in a second knock that down. So, yeah, I didn't love his celebration. I think Trey pointed out on Twitter, turned it into a little Reggie Miller with the spin jumps, but had to feel goodly, like exercising some demons, of course, having lost a game 7 there in that barn before. And, you know, now they'll see if they can close it out here.
Yeah, Embiid, obviously great. And I think he actually is embracing the physicality, because the Raptors are trying to sort of just give him as many bodies and as much attention physically as they can. And he's enjoying it. And that's great. That's what you want him to see. It's basically like, these guys, not one person can slow me down. A couple of guys make it harder for me, but he's still too big and strong, and he's pretty agile as well when he gets inside there, so that's great. As for the Raptors, I thought their offensive execution in the fourth quarter and overtime was awful. I thought
it's horrible.
Why was everyone in love with the right wing three-pointer? OG had a couple out there, Fred had one, I think Precious, I believe, had one as well, and they were missing by a mile. But it was also like they were eating clock, the ball wasn't moving around, and then it was just like, okay, whoever's got it with 3 seconds to go, fire away here. OG hit a 3 in overtime that was a lucky one as the clock ran out. But other than that, that's where I sort of felt the Raptors let this game go. I mean, you know, obviously Embiid was the star here, but the Raptors didn't put any pressure on that defense of Philadelphia. They just sort of stood around. So Nick Nurse has to take some of the blame for that. But also it's on the players. It's on Fred. It's on Pascal to be like, all right, we have to move and create something and take better shots than just guys firing away from deep. So that was a disappointing loss here for the Raptors. Obviously, now the series is you know, virtually over. Mathematically, the Raptors are still in it, of course. But they can't just continue to do this. In game 2, they started off better. you know, played a better sort of 12 to 15 minutes. This game, they played better for at least three quarters. But winning time came in the fourth quarter and overtime, and the Raptors were very, very bad executing at both ends of the floor.
Yeah. Your best player can't take five shots, miss them all, not get to the free throw line in the final, 30 minutes, basically, of the game. I'm talking about Siakam. Mm-hmm. In an elimination game at that, really, effectively an elimination game.
Yeah.
He was horrible. I think Zach Harper had a tweet. I couldn't agree with it more. It looked like Siakam was dribbling a football.
Yeah,
no handles.
It was so weird. I mean, again, and I've gone to bat for this guy for months here on the show saying he is All-NBA. He's deserving of an All-NBA selection. But Tass, you're right. He hasn't played like that in these last three games, especially not in the second half last night. And I went back again this morning because I don't know why I wanted to do it to myself, but I watched all of his takes, all of his misses, you know, and in the second half especially, you can just play so far back up off him. And he was settling. I mean, it was an open look, but he just couldn't even come close to hitting it around the free throw line. That's all they did. They're like, he couldn't go by Danny Green. He couldn't go by Shake Milton because his handle was sloppy as shit. And then Embiid on him or Tobias, they just sort of would back up. Go ahead, take that little jumper there around the free throw line. And it was Clank City. So it just a brutal game from him. OG played well. Precious played really well. Gary Trent Jr. played all right, you know, coming back from the shits or whatever he had going on and was hitting shots. But your star players in Fred and Siakam, I mean, it's amazing they're almost in this game, Trey.
Yeah, Tass nailed it. The role players played perfectly fine for the Raptors last night. Getting 26 from OG. He's been consistent in these games so far, but 24 points combined from Fred VanVleet and Pascal Siakam. That ain't going to cut it against the Sixers team that is obviously motivated against the Raptors. I think Embiid has had this series circled since probably about 2019. That's why you hear him kind of calling out Nick Nurse after every single game. You were complaining about the foul calls. Nothing to worry about in this one is what he said. That was impressive to see the Sixers pull that win off after not leading at all in regulation. Their first lead wasn't until overtime. A clutch timeout by Doc Rivers. And then, like you're saying, Skeets, Embiid with a lightning quick release to be able to get that shot off. And like they went to the replay, and he probably could have gotten that off if it was like 0.4 seconds left yeah, on the clock. Yeah. He got it off so quick. A great call. And yeah, maybe a little bit too cutesy from Nick Nurse there to call Freddie away from guarding the ball on the inbounds play. Because even VanVleet was like, okay, I'll just run to the back here. Suddenly, you see Embiid flash into the wing. Money.
Also, I mean, why is it even VanVleet if that's the case? Like, if you're going to protect the rim, I can think of some other guys on the Raptors that might went under there. And then even if you're going to, like, try and prevent an easy pass in on the inbounds, probably you go with someone else a little bigger task than VanVleet. But
yeah, it was strange to see. Yeah, he was under the rim, and he ended up being the closest guy to Embiid on the release, which was wild because, Toby set the pick of his life. Screen assist to Mr. Toby. But Embiid had a practice shot at the end of regulation. He shot that same shot, same spot, then was able 5 minutes later to score. I thought Tobias Harris rebounded that first one at the end of regulation and missed a dinker, a 4-foot hook shot. That looked like that should have gone down. He had a really, really good game. But it was, the rap stars not showing up. It was odd because Pascal Siakam had the most field goals through the first half of this game. He had six made shots, and it looked like Pascal-like. Yeah, they were dropping off him, but
he was getting
the free throw line.
Again, I watched him again, like I said. He was getting so much deeper in the first half, like 2 or 3 feet into the paint, then was hitting it. And then again, the second half, for whatever reason, the way the Sixers started to play him, I don't know what it was, but they were like out of the paint. They were like past the free throw line. That was the one difference that I noticed, Tass. Just otherwise, the shot wasn't falling. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I have flashbacks to that one right at the free throw line that, as time was ticking down in the fourth, where he just clanked it. And it's hard not to have flashbacks of the bubble and things not going too well for Pascal as the number one guy. This series just didn't start well. And that's why every game does matter. Anyway, wild. Wild stuff from the Raps, quote-unquote stars, because, the second half just hasn't been good to Fred. And second half of this game wasn't good for either guy.
Yeah, and look, Raptors fans have, they can't be upset about a bad whistle at all last night. If anything, I thought the Raptors were getting a majority of some of the like 50-50 calls. Okay, there was
Harden
the
sixth as well.
Well, the foul out on Harden there. I mean, that was the one that put OG to the line, right? Where if he hits two, they take the lead. Yeah, it wasn't a foul. So they got that. There was the OG block goal 10 on the Harden layup, like with 1:15 left. The only thing I hate about that is like, it's such like a, the refs just call it a goal 10 just so they can go look at it. And that one was so clear. It looked like they're like, okay, we're going to play. And then they're like, oh, hold on. Maybe let's just call it a goal 10 so we can go have a couple looks at it. And then ultimately, they kept it a goal 10. That would, I mean, so, so close.
How do you judge whether a finger
down.
Roll is going down or not?
Yeah,
it's
crazy.
Like, that's the weirdest. It's a difficult call, obviously. It's like it comes out of his hand and it's on the way down because he's right at the rim. It's an impossible call, but I guess it's the frickin' right one.
Again, I just hate that it's like the get out of jail free card that they play because they're like, because it looks like they weren't going to call anything.
They weren't,
and then their brain goes, well, fuck it, call it because then we can look at it. Seriously.
And because the Sixers were jumping up and down.
Yeah, right. And but otherwise, I mean, again, I want to make it very clear. The Raps are not losing this game because of like some conspiracy against them and the officials are all over them and be living at the line. No, not at all. I'm not sure if you agree with that, Lee. I assume you do.
I do. I hate referee talk because they've been outplayed, the Raptors. They've been outplayed through three games. Joel Embiid has basically said, all right, I am going to make you guys foul me. And he's doing that. And the Raptors don't really have any option because if you try to play him straight up, he's just going to get those little mid-rangers. So you have to sort of try to send him to the line and get physical with him. And it's like, okay, this is fine. This is working. So the refs have not done anything to influence a series. That goaltend, I don't love that call because I don't think it was. Even on review, I don't think it was. I mean, as far as I understand the rule, it's got to clearly be on its way down. And it wasn't clearly on its way down, even on the review. Anyway, they made the call. The Raptors lost. And honestly, they have to look in the mirror, as I said earlier, at how they execute in the fourth quarter. If Pascal's not got it, that's fine. But the ball still has to move. That's my problem, is I hate it when teams' offense just gets so stagnant. And it's like this, you see the shot clock down to 7-6. And the guy's just like, all right, I've got it. I'm just going to shoot and hope. And that's not a way to win close games.
If Goran Dragic is there, they win this game. He's at 16 and 18 through the first two games with the Nets. Like, he at least
he's
going to
drive anyway. He's going to drive, I think, rather than just what you're getting out of the Raptors at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, the truth is the offense. Yeah, they did. I can't believe you haven't said that yet.
They had this game won. They had this game won. Practice your free throws, kid. You had to have said it out loud.
I had a tweet in the can ready. Practice your expensive throws, kids, because Precious only needs to hit one, and OG should have hit that one as well. But
you had the tweet in the can that said, "Practice your expensive ones."
Practice your expensive throws, kids. But I just didn't feel it. I just
didn't. Good idea. You
felt sad.
That one. Any other notes from this one? How about angry Danny Green there in the first half? Harden grabbing him by the neck. Relax, Danny.
Oh, Maxi as well. Like, I thought they're going to start fighting him. Like,
I know. Why was Danny so upset?
I know. I've never seen Danny
Green.
I'm
not even sure we ever got a good replay at that, did we? Like, what really got him so pissed off, Tess? Did they ever really show us on the broadcast? Like, what snapped there in Danny?
It was a weird one because, he was mad at the call. He didn't think he fouled him. And I kind of agree. I think there was a quick replay. I think his teammates trying to calm him down made it worse. They kind of, brought attention to it. I don't think the ref was going to call anything until Tyrese and who was the other guy? Harden, tried to calm him down. They brought attention to it, I think, trying to calm down their bro. They were more animated, just as animated, I guess, as Danny. But it was weird to see old three-time champ get furious. Never seen that before.
I was having Brad Wanamaker flashbacks with George Niang, I'll tell you that. Guy played, felt like he played 90 seconds and he hit like three threes. So it's like, God damn it. Oh, not Niang. Maxi didn't have as great a game as he did in obviously games 1 and 2, but I thought, I think he scored right at the start of overtime. Picked his spots perfectly. Not a bad game by any means. Like, this kid's for real, man. He's contributing here in a playoff series three games in a row now, and they needed every point from him lately.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing. You don't expect him to have the 38 that he had in game one every single night, but he's not afraid at the moment. And again, his speed really gives him an advantage because no one can stop him. So he's in the lane in a flash, And then he's a good finisher around the rim. But he can also find, if you've got, you know, those guys on the perimeter knocking down shots, then it's great if it is the Niang Gang Bang or if it's Danny Green, someone hitting shots. So he's good. I'm a big, big fan of Tyrese Maxey. I think he's going to be a good player.
I thought Nurse's move of taking less guys or putting less guys on Harden and playing him one-on-one helped. You know, Harden had some good baskets, and he scored 19, and he kind of buoyed the team in the second quarter there for a bit. But I thought it did help. And rather than Maxey's 35, they each went for 19, and there was a little bit more attention on Tyrese Maxey. But yeah, I mean, when it comes down to it, Trey's right. I mean, free throws, blah, blah, for sure. I mean, that's and OG's toilet bowl, that went in and out, rejected.
Swirly.
That was not a Gary Trent diarrhea. I was not going down the toilet.
I will say, too, in overtime, maybe this is something we're going to see here more because, you know, a desperation game four. There was a couple possessions where OG was on Maxey, Precious on Embiid, of course, and the switch would come. And so then that's really OG on Embiid and Precious sort of like trying to move his feet with Maxey if it would go back to him. And it worked. They switched that. OG on Embiid, and they got two stops there in overtime. Obviously, didn't matter in the end, but maybe something to watch in Game 4. No team in NBA history has ever lost a series after building the 3-0 lead. You're going to see that over the next couple days. But what do you think, Lee? Is a gentleman sweep more likely, or is this like Embiid was telling Drake, it's an actual sweep?
Well, it's never happened, so it's going to have to happen. You can't come back from 3-0 down without being down 3-0, so maybe.
Love it.
I mean, no one saw when the Red Sox came back against the Yankees in 04 and came back.
No one saw
it. You know, so it can happen. But, the class of Embiid especially is really standing out, and credit to Philadelphia. I'm not walking away from my prediction where I said I thought the Raptors would devour them because I thought they would, and I'm not making any excuses for the injuries either. The Raptors just have not been good. Philadelphia has been much better and certainly deserving of this 3-0 lead. Yes, the Raptors, maybe they do get the Game 4 consolation prize here, but very difficult to see them coming back, of course, and winning this series. Historically, statistically, has never happened and unlikely to occur here.
Well, speaking of injuries there, I think I heard this right or saw this right on Twitter. Was Nurse saying basically Scottie Barnes is going to be playing in Game 4? Did I have that information correct? And is that the wise move, I ask you, Tass? Like, even if he can go, should you be bringing him back at this point down 3-0 and your chances extremely slim? Like, what do you think?
Do it. If he can play, why the heck not? It is crazy to see a guy in a walking boot on the sideline and then the next game, Saturday night. Yeah, lace him up, kid.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, I'm not a doctor. I trust the doctors wouldn't throw him out there if he wasn't.
Okay.
I mean, they obviously could use the every four possessions. He's the guy who's creating, don't you think? I mean,
yes.
Obviously they need him. The worry is he's going to get injured again.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, that would be the main concern. You'd basically be playing them in sort of a pointless game, I guess, is what I'm getting at here. If you truly, unless you're likely and you believe it's got to happen at some point in NBA history, and why not us, damn it?
You got 6 months to chill, kid.
Look, hey, Lee, my Raps in 7 prediction. It's technically alive.
It's mathematically
alive,
you know.
Absolutely.
I think it was the Mavs and the Blazers in about 2004 when the Mavs were up 3-0 and then the Blazers came back to make it 3-3 and then the Mavs prevailed. So, you know, you just want that hope at least, nice. You know. That's all you're looking for right
now. Well, start with Game 4. But the way Embiid is, putting his imprint on this series and how badly you can tell he does want to beat the Raptors for what happened in 19.
Yeah. He wants
shut
that
up, Drake. Yeah, for sure. So we'll see what happens on Saturday. I think that's a day game there on Saturday. My only other note, and Tass, I know you probably have an opinion on this too. It drives me insane how empty the lower bowl is at the start of every third quarter for Raptors game. It angers me, Tass. I can't stand how empty it is every single fucking time. In the regular season, sure. okay, we'll get back, 4 or 5 minutes in the third quarter. It's a playoff game. It's a must win. This is do or die. This is your complete season here. And people, for whatever reason, can't get back to their seats. And it, I swear it has an impact on the team. It's just, it's so dead and flat in there. And the other team, like the Sixers last night, they're suddenly back in the game. And they erase a 10-point deficit just like that. Drives me nuts.
I can get pissed, too.
Yeah.
What about, I was actually at game two for the Heat. Nobody showed up right at the beginning of the game. I was going to tweet something about it. It's smart that they put the white T-shirts out there on the seats because right. It looks like fans are in there. But, they did arrive a few minutes late, just like the Raptors crowd there in the third quarter. It is annoying. And then last night, watching the Bulls-Bucks, some guy came back. There was a close-up of a break-in play, full beer, sloshing around. Play starts, and he tries to get to his seat, and everybody has to get up and can't watch the game because this dude who could very likely spill a beer on somebody because there's no caps, I guess, for the executive seats there on the beers, also forces you to get up so you can't see, and their bucket was splashed. Like, wait. Like a bowler who's got to step up and bowl, or a golfer who's got to step up and hit the ball, just wait a freaking second.
Okay.
Or a tent or a serve, just chill for a sec. Sit. Just sit on the stairs for like 5 seconds. Mm. That's what I think, anyway. Okay. That's what I do, but I'm a little too courteous.
Okay. Well, let's move to that to the Bulls game. This will be a lot more fun here. Lift our spirits. DeRozan, baby. Oh, he's a former Raptor. I love it. Scoring 41. DeRozan 41 as the Bulls hang on to beat the Bucks 114-110 and tie this series up. Trey Kirby, take it away, man.
My sweet, beautiful Bulls. They really did it. They beat the Bucks with Giannis in Milwaukee in the playoffs. They said it couldn't be done. I don't know if it's going to stick, but I'm calling game two the no way in hell game. Because after game one, DeMar DeRozan said, there's no way in hell I shoot 6 for 25 again. And he didn't. 41 points for DeMar, a career playoff high. 16 of 31 from the field, joining Michael Jordan, Derrick Rose, Ben Gordon, and old Flynn Robinson. They said it on the broadcast last night. I was like, Glenn Robinson? When did he ever play for the Bulls? It was Flynn. Mm. Only guys to have 40 or more in a playoff game. He did a lot of that damage in the second half, scoring 24 on 10 of 19 shooting. And the interesting thing about that, he was being guarded by Giannis Antetokounmpo for a large chunk of this one. According to ESPN stats and info, DeMar went 8 of 9 for 16 points with Giannis as his primary defender. And we've said it before talking about this series, he was always going to have to come up big in the fourth quarter for the Bulls to pull off a win. And it was MVP mode last night with 2:30 left. Bulls up by 5. DeRozan finds sweet Vucci baby for a clutch 3-pointer. Bucks go down and score. Bulls are up 7 with a minute 30 left. DeRozan gets to the line, makes his 2 free throws. Brooke Lopez, of course, scores a couple of more times. I thought he was going to pull this one out for the Bucks.
Yeah.
Once again, cuts the Bulls' lead to 3. Biggest possession of the game, 55 seconds left. Bulls ball. DeRozan misses a tough mid-ranger, tipped out by Alex Caruso. There's 5 Carusos out there. He was incredible in this game. The ball gets to Patrick Williams. Wide open 3-pointer. Shoots it to the moon, misses, but tipped out by sweet Vucci baby. DeRozan attacks the hoop, finishes over Giannis to go up 5. Ball game, Bulls game. First win over Giannis since 2017. First win in Milwaukee since 2017. First playoff win since 2017. Wow. And now the series is tied 1-1, heading to Chicago for a pivotal Game 3. I could barely sleep last night. I was so hyped up. I sat down in this office. I turned on my ring light and I was like, should I do it? Should I go live right now?
Oh, you should have. Yeah.
Yeah. Laura was sleeping like directly above me. The entire house was a slumber. I didn't want to be ranting and raving like a maniac, but what a game. What a game. To see, if it's only one win, it was a cool one.
Wow. Well, hold on. I mean, the Bucks lose this game there on Wednesday, but even worse than that, they lose possibly 2 key players in the process here. Early in the fourth quarter, Middleton exits the game with left knee soreness after he slips awkwardly there in the middle of a spin move in the post. He's got a sprained MCL. Bucks came out and said that right away. He's undergoing an MRI today. We'll see how severe it is. So that's huge. Because he started getting it going in the second half, too. That was a full Ferris wheel experience.
Oh, yeah.
It was low, then it was high, and then it was broken, unfortunately, for him. But we'll see what happens moving forward in the series. And then Bobby Portis, of course, leaving the game, too, at halftime after taking a shot in the eye there in the first quarter, blood going everywhere. I think he is going to play in Chicago. But the Middleton is massively, of course, not just for that game last night. You know, maybe he plays, maybe they pull it off and complete the comeback. But if he's out for games here, this is a series, I think, between these two teams.
Absolutely it is. I mean, Chris Middleton is huge for this team. Yeah. He has been a massive playoff performer. He's had a few duds in there, but overall, he's had way better, bigger performances than bad games. So they're desperately going to miss him, depending on how long he's out for there. But the only thing is, I guess the Bucks have done this before where they tend to start off slowly. And look, maybe they overlooked the Chicago Bulls a little bit. I think that's probably fair to assume. They're like, they can't really stop us. Everyone was healthy going into the start of this series, and now they're behind. I mean Giannis has been good. You know, he had another monster game there last night, but they're not really getting anything else from apart from Brook Lopez from anybody else, really. Drew Holiday, I don't think, has been very good for them, and the bench isn't giving them all that much. I think Connaughton gave them the sort of best thing last night, but even that, he finished only 3 points. Felt like he had a bit more than that, but he didn't. So Wes Matthews isn't really doing anything for them. So everything right now is really
they're
good.
Shallow, man.
Very shallow. And then on the other end, I mean, Vucci, he had to make himself important in this series, and he's had 24 in both games, and he's just been, you know, batting the ball out and trying to do what he can. That's huge, I think, for Chicago, because DeRozan's performance last night, as Trey mentioned there, the most impressive part was Giannis said, hey, all right, I'll get on this guy. And DeRozan's like, okay, great. And he just kept stepping into those mid-rangers and knocking them down. It was Gus Johnson on the call there. He was loving it, and I was loving his call as well.
Cold-blooded!
Frozen DeRozan. Yeah. He said frozen, honestly, about 1,000 times last night. You know, usually the guy's like red hot, he's heating up. Instead, it was colder and colder and colder. He is cold-blooded out there. Yeah. So this is huge. Ultimately, of course, I still think the Bucks win this series, even if Middleton can't go, but certainly this should be the wake-up call that perhaps Milwaukee needed, because again, even game one, they kind of had to pull it out in the end. They didn't play their best basketball, and that's just something that they do. They start off slowly. They started off slowly against the Brooklyn Nets last season. They started off slowly in the bubble, remember, against Orlando. So, you know, this is the sort of team that's like sometimes just needs to maybe almost lose one to be like, all right, now we've got to lock in. So fascinated to see, though, what happens here in game three, because I think the madhouse on Madison is going to be crazy. I hope whatever happens, we get a Trey Kirby Chuck Swirsky dance post game in.
Oh,
in the,
yeah. Okay. So Trey, you're flying later today, right? In a couple hours, flying to Chicago. Okay, and so game three, that's a Friday night, is that correct?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Wow. All right.
Believe, man. Excited. You gotta believe. Why the heck not? You know, yeah. The Bucks last year, they go and win the thing. They basically lose every game one, other than that, you know, slog of a game one in the first round. So yes, they get better as the series go on. But, you know, it took a couple miracles there. The conference finals, you know, Giannis went out. And so that's the prototype, the template. Giannis went out somehow. Drew, Brooke, Middleton got it together. And so even if Middleton goes down, who is a really, really important player for them, they have the tools to do it. It's kind of got to be on Drew. They kind of have to need a perimeter guy to make this happen. But. Let's say we get a smoking hot DeMar again. It was awesome to see DeMar in his best season in the NBA, year number 13, have his best playoff game in the NBA. And yeah. I think it kind of makes sense against this Bucks team, because they want to drop every time. They want to guard that rim. The mid-range is open. And him, yeah, sizing up Giannis was awesome for him. He was sizing him up and just getting into his move. And sometimes he would hit that shot and fall to the floor, not get a call, but the ball was just going in. So this Bucks team is a good match for him if he stays hot and everybody just falls in line behind him. Yeah, if Middleton's not there, it took the Bucks a while to click last postseason. I know, like first round they beat the Heat and it was a sweep. But the Heat were really, really, really bad. And then they figured it out against the Brooklyn Nets, and they won in seven against a strange lineup of the Nets. And then, yeah, the miracle series was the conference finals against the Hawks. So they haven't started the playoffs well. They didn't start it well last year. Bulls just got to jump on it. Bulls got to get that game
Game three. Got to do it.
Were you surprised, Tass, that it was his career high, 41, for DeRozan? I was like, wow. He didn't have one 40-point game in the playoffs for the Raptors. The highest was 37, I just checked. That caught me by surprise a little bit.
It is strange, I think, because it seems like DeRozan's game is built for the postseason. Like, when you have to make mid-range jumpers, and, you know, he's just had some moments in the past where he missed a lot of mid-range jumpers. Happened in game one as well. So, get to 41 was super impressive. You just gotta get hot. And I mean, he was. I mean, like, he was like fingertips over Giannis to barely get those balls to the hoop. I think even they were trying to foul him after those couple of offensive rebounds. Like, after the Vucci one swats it out to him, I think Connaughton like ran up to try and foul him at the top of the key, but they didn't call it. He went to the hoop and finished at the rim.
Usually DeMar's games in the postseason have a boatload of free throws. So this one felt a little bit more DeMar-like, banging home shots. I mean, he's had some big free throw games in the postseason. This one, yeah. The problem was why I may have been clogging my Wi-Fi broadband is because I was loading DeRozan's game log in the postseason. I looked at it earlier today, and I thought it was the best game. The stat line just taken over. And maybe it's because I've got bad memories of the Raptors losing games, but this one felt real, especially with, you know, single-digit free throws.
Yeah, absolutely. Any other thoughts from anybody here? Lee, you got anything else on Bucks Bulls? You like having Gus Johnson back on the call?
I love having Gus Johnson on the call. His energy is great. Kevin Calabro, too, last night. Awesome. He was fantastic.
I agree.
And then we had Brian Anderson, I think, wasn't it, in Boston.
Yep.
So really good night on the calls. Everyone was doing great.
I don't like listen, everybody was good. I don't like a Billy the Kid call for Billy Donovan.
Billy the Kid.
Just because it's a nickname, you don't got to use it every time.
That's fair.
It's not his nickname. It's just you know the nickname with Bill. It's Billy, and you throw it on Donovan, who is not a kid.
Okay. And John, no, I agree. And Trey, any other thoughts on your Bulls here as you head to Chicago?
Yeah, I'm jacked. I can't wait. Got a crew of five bros going on Friday. Really excited. Shout out to my guy, Tommy Porro. I saw him here in the stream team earlier. He'll be there. He sees red. So that's going to be exciting. I'm excited. A couple of things I'm going to definitely be watching. Jrue Holiday has been basically nowhere so far to start this series. He's 12 of 32 from the field. He has 12 assists and he has 10 turnovers. This just looks like the weird Jrue Holiday games where he's just, you know, kind of giving it defensively, no doubt about it, but not a lot of interest in being a scorer. They're going to need that if Middleton's going to be missing some time here. And the other part where the Bulls have been surprisingly good so far is forcing turnovers against the Bucks. That was kind of the Bulls' big key early in the season when they were having some success defensively, was a lot of activity, a lot of Caruso deflections, and a lot of just running around trying to get turnovers. So if they're able to keep the turnovers down, and if they're able to keep Jrue Holiday out of rhythm going back to Chicago, that's huge for the Bulls, because I think Zach LaVine can be better as well. Like, he had a better game in game two, but he was kind of invisible in the second half until he hit a big three-pointer in the fourth quarter, just scored 20 points, much more efficient. But it would be good for the Bulls if he had a big-time game at some point.
Yeah, and just final thoughts on Caruso. I mean, you slipped it in there, Trey, how amazing he was. Again, the box score, it's not going to like, wow, you only had 9 points, but he had 10 assists, the two steals, two blocks. He hit three threes. Those are money. And he's a plus 16 leading the entire game in that stat. It does feel like there's multiple Carusos out there at times. The guy plays hard. I do love that they throw world champion in front of his name too. You notice Caruso gets that a lot.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like, you could say that about a lot of guys, but he gets it all the time because he's one of those scrappy different makers.
Yeah, it's also, what else are you going to say about Caruso? Role player Alex Caruso?
He is...
We throw a lot of, you know, lines, these little phrases for guys, but Alex Caruso deserves, you know, coach on the floor, deserves the championship pedigree, all that crap.
Yeah.
You heard him in one of the audio segments there, and he was talking about just doing stuff like keeping your hands back and stuff that helped the Lakers win the championship, and that's exactly what they need. I'm riding high. I'm looking forward to Friday night. The Bucks have to play with a little bit more A little bit more physicality on the defensive end, I guess, is what it is. What they're talking about right now. The Bulls brought it, obviously. Let's see what happens in game three.
That's where Middleton, if he's going to miss games, you know, whatever, 3-4, if he's out for the series, hopefully not. We're finding out what the MRI says later today, I'm sure. But, like, he's a great defensive player. He does not get nearly enough credit on that end. We think of him as, like, sort of like they're just score and stuff like that. He is really solid. He doesn't get fooled easily. He's always in the right position. So that would be a tough, tough loss for the Bucks, who are, like we said, they just don't have a lot of depth on this team. But they have Giannis still, and that can win you still a lot of games. So huge game there on Friday night. So excited, Trey and the boys, including Tommy Poro. Good morning, good evening, good night, good afternoon. I can't wait for you guys to enjoy that game three. Okay, let's take our first break. When we come back, we'll talk about the Celtics taking the 2-0 series lead on the Nets, and we got some Devin Booker news about his injury. Don't go anywhere.
I'm Trey Wingo.
And I'm Kevin Frazier. We're teaming up on a new weekly sports podcast from Wondery, Alternate Routes.
As former SportsCenter anchors and current sports obsessives, we're consumed by all the what-if questions that make being a sports fan so excruciatingly fun.
If you're like us, then you also live and die on the fallout from every drop pass, busted draft pick, and game-changing play.
Or play call.
Intercepted at the goal line by Malcolm Butler.
Sorry, Marshawn, still too soon. Each week on Alternate Routes, we'll take a flashpoint in sports, break down what actually happened, then explore every alternate scenario and the ripple effects it would have caused.
Follow and listen to Alternate Routes on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen ad-free by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.
I mean, the possibilities are limitless, Kevin.
What if Portland drafted Michael Jordan?
What if the NBA never vetoed the Chris Paul trade to the Lakers?
That's a butterfly effect for real.
If only starting your fitness journey was as easy as starting this podcast. That would make me so happy. The truth is, all the lift big, get big, and beach body ready in 3 weeks pressure stops most of us from even starting. And starting is what matters most. It's everything, really. It really is. Wherever you're beginning and wherever you want to be, Peloton encourages you to just start. With thousands of classes to get you moving and doing what you can. If that's a 10-minute low-impact class, they got those. And when you're ready, take it up a gear. You know, a 30-minute live DJ ride. DJ John Michael, that guy plays the hits. He always gets me going. Start with Peloton and find instructors that will keep you motivated to stay on your fitness journey. Learn the basics and build from there. Remember, doing something is everything. Get started with a Peloton bike or bike plus rental at onepeloton.com/bike/rentals. onepeloton.com/bike/rentals. Terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
All right, a quick hello to everybody joining us a little bit later. Take a second, like the video, subscribe to No Dunks on YouTube, and drop your comments there in the stream team. We really appreciate it. Well, I heard this on the ding this morning, Lili. You didn't want to have a 17-point lead last night. And it wraps up 17, blow it. Celtics down 17, come back to win. So the Nets blew that. 18, you were good, like the Bulls had there, and then they held on. But 17, that was the magic number last night. So yeah, let's get into it. Celtics rally in the second half to beat the Nets. 114-107 in the end and take the 2-0 series lead. The Beantown boys taking care of business in Boston.
They sure are. A couple of bad stats and bad signs, really, for Brooklyn, because that Celtics defense is absolutely living up to the hype. I've never seen Kevin Durant sort of look unable to just put his stamp on offense like this. Every single Boston defender is causing him some sort of trouble, and usually that second defender is almost right there every time, and he knows it's coming, and I think that's causing him to rush it, to get his shot off a little bit. They mostly haven't been great. Look, some of them have been okay, but that pressure and that ball pressure is forcing turnovers into him. He had another 6 last night in addition to the 6 he had in game 1. And I think it's because he's being rushed. He's like, I haven't got time to sort of dribble too much to get to the spot that I like to get to. And when he gets there, there's just so many arms and Celtics bodies coming at him that he just can't get a sort of a good couple of clean looks off. He went 4 for 17 from the field last night, missed his last 10. He got to the free throw line. He went 18 for 20. Okay, that's fine. But that's not kind of where Kevin Durant's going to kill you. I think he beats you when he's just lacing jumper after jumper. He's coming down. It's like, we can't stop this guy because he's just too good. And so I think that's a major concern here for Boston because they're not getting a ton of support from other guys. Well, Kyrie basically didn't even show up last night. Seth Curry and Bruce Brown were okay, but that was about it. And then for Boston, I don't think one player like truly dominated, which is a great sign here for the Celtics. I think Jaylen Brown was their best. He had 22 points, hit some big shots down the stretch. And he is so effective when he drives inside. Like, he hangs in the air. He gets that shot up right near the rim. He's got incredible handles. You saw him really just undress Kyrie or Bruce Brown or Kyrie on one of those ones. And then he finishes inside. And then Jason Tatum, I mean, only 19 points and 10 assists, not a massive box score, but he's just orchestrating that offense so well. I think he's just coming down and he's like, he's creating for others. He knows when he has to go and get his shot, he's doing that. But this is great for Boston that you don't need a guy having to go out there and score 35 or 40 points. Everyone's contributing. Horford, very solid again. Grant Williams off the bench hit 3-3. Peyton Pritchard was even handy in his minutes. You know, he hit a three. God, yeah. He was playing well. And Boston as well, going back to their defense here, they forced 7 steals last night. And I went back and checked the tape this morning. 6 of those led directly, I mean directly, to a basket. They on 12 points they scored on those fast breaks. A couple of threes in there. And then the other one was a foul where Kevin Durant fouled Al Horford. He didn't like that call, but he fouled him and slowed down the transition play there. So when Boston forced those turnovers on Brooklyn, they get punished immediately for it. And then it's the opposite with Brooklyn's defense. They're not creating any pressure, I don't think. No, not creating any action. It feels more like they're just hanging on, hoping Boston misses shots. And Boston, you know, Boston aren't like torching them from the field, but they're just getting cleaner looks because that ball's moving around. So this one, obviously now going back to Brooklyn, game 3 is pivotal in that series. The Nets need one. They led this one. They look good enough, but they couldn't close it out. And Kevin Durant, I think he's showing some signs of fatigue there as well. He plays a ton of minutes, and just the fact that he can't get going, get that rhythm going, is really slowing down Brooklyn's offense.
It is weird to see Kevin Durant, Trey, look normal. I mean, that's what he looks like. He doesn't look like what a lot of people consider the greatest offensive player of all time. Some people go as far as saying, you know, he has showed that many times before. It's the Celtics defense. Maybe it's fatigue, and he's just in a funk right now. I mean, 4-17, not hitting a shot in the second half is wild for KD.
Yeah, 20 free throw attempts, so the overall line number looks fine. Yeah. But yeah, 4 for 17, and it just feels a little bit like the Celtics at least have an idea of what they want to do with Kevin Durant. That's be right up on him, be right in his airspace. They keep talking about it, and they've got enough length and athleticism to be able to challenge his shots, even if he's going to be able to still get them off. But he's got a hand in his face almost every single time. So really, really impressive by the Celtics. This was a team that we were calling too many soloists early in the season, and just an incredible ensemble victory last night. Played 8 guys, only 13 minutes for Derek White. He was the only one who didn't score in double digits. 10 for Pritchard, I thought, was huge. 17 for Grant Williams. A perfect night. 6 of 6 from the free throw line. 3 of 3 from three, and then another 2-point make as well. I thought he was massive on defense, especially in the first half of this game. So yeah, that was impressive. And then to get offensive production from Daniel Tice, like, is big time as well, I think, because I think that's a... You know, for as much as the defense might fall off, missing Robert Williams, he's also a good passer and the best vertical threat that the Celtics have. Tice has stepped into that role alongside Grant Williams, and they've been able to cover those minutes with no problem. He could come back at some point further on in the playoffs as well. So the Celtics just found a way to win. You know, it could have easily been a Nets victory here. Maybe they have a little bit of confidence that they're like, yeah, we'll play better at some point, but you just lost 2 that were winnable. You could have stolen one of these, and if you're going to pull off the upset, you have to be able to steal a road game.
Yeah, I thought Grant Williams, when the Celtics were down, but he was like keeping them alive there in the first quarter. I think he scored the final 8 points. I know he splashed 2 threes, scored again. Then he had a block just to keep it, you know, within striking distance, of course. Like,
talked they kept trash after that block.
Yeah, and they kept ending quarters. I mean, it's always, I find in watching all these games, one thing, it's a weird thing. If the team is up, But the other team that's trailing, if they can end a quarter, let's say the first quarter, and then it also happens at the half, which it also happened in this game, even if you're down, it's a hell of a sign, because it means like it's just the definition of like hanging around. Give yourself a chance, and that's what they did in this one. But Tass, what were your big takeaways from the Celtics winning this?
I just thought it was unbelievable that the Nets couldn't do anything in the fourth quarter. These are the guys who are supposed to perform in the fourth quarter, and it was a total flip of game one where... yeah, the Celtics were up big going into the fourth. The Nets performed 29-19. They outscored the Celtics in the fourth. And then in this one, an absolute flip. I had to watch it twice because I just didn't understand what the heck happened on both sides of the ball. Because if you only score 17 points as the Nets did in the fourth quarter and you gave up 29, you just got absolutely spanked. It had to happen on both ends. And on the defensive end, their backcourt is just too small, and the Celtics started picking who they wanted. When Tatum got on the floor about 10 minutes left, he got an easy switch on Curry, backed him down, set up Brown for a three. Next possession, Jaylen Brown's turn, got Irving on an island, went through him and scored. Next possession, Tatum got Irving on his back, set up Pritchard for a three. Next possession, Brown picked Irving, spun through him and scored. It's not like Kyrie Irving is weak or isn't strong. He's ridiculously strong, but this just shows you height matters. And even though people will say, you know, they don't play defense anymore, I mean, these guys were trying to play defense, but literally the Nets don't have anybody on the perimeter that's tall enough. Obviously, Ben Simmons coming back would be huge. They just released James Johnson before the playoffs because they thought Kessler Edwards was going to play and Nash isn't playing him. So they're really just, they're switching easily. So they're just trying to, you know, play through it. And the Celtics were just scoring at will. And Durant knows it. He said it after the game. He said, quote, "They get in isolation situations and we usually play three guards under 6'2", 6'3". He's like, you know, he's giving you the roster and what's going on. And then he goes on about the isolation situations and we just play. So it's like, I don't know. I mean, I don't think it's excuses. I think KD is just absolutely not in his flow. So if they, like I said, the defensive end was a struggle and they're only scoring 17 points in that fourth quarter. Durant, yeah, as you guys said, yeah, four baskets in this game, although he got to the line a ton, just has been taken out of his rhythm. You know, he got open shots in the fourth looking back, but they just rattled in and out. And, they're obviously the Nets are a little bit predictable and it started to look a little bit like last year. But listen, the Celtics just play incredible defense. And I thought the 50-50 balls were big too in the fourth quarter. It's like the Nets weren't up to the task. There were some weird plays where Kyrie had the ball on the baseline, no one around him and could have passed out, but just waited for a double team to come and Tatum just smacks it off his leg and it goes out of bounds. So everything just went the Celtics' way while the Nets, yeah, just totally off. Durant hasn't looked this way in a long time, probably since he was a member of the Thunder. People, you know, pointing out the 3-1 loss to the Warriors, and I guess, but it was strange. You know, Peyton Pritchard had as many points as Durant and Irving combined in the fourth quarter. That just doesn't happen in basketball. I mean, I don't, and Nash, and his first line was, you know, we haven't had many minutes together. And I guess that's what it kind of looked like in the fourth quarter. Kind of just looked like a team that wasn't comfortable playing together, but they looked so much better in the fourth quarter of game one and just were rattled when they were up. Like as you were talking about there, Skeets, they were up going into the fourth. They had the lead, but just couldn't find the bottom of the net and were easy to pick on defensively. As Lee was talking about, the Celtics didn't have an incredible offensive game, but they're just picking, yeah, okay, we'll go at you, Kyrie. Okay, we'll go at you, Seth. And that was it.
What do you think Nash does here, Lee, moving into game three? This is what I'm fascinated to see, because like Durant was he's getting the ball sort of in the middle of the floor, and then, of course, all the Celtics wings sort of like, you know, sink down, run at him, and they're still quick enough to recover. So it's not like KD can pick him apart like by finding shooters and stuff like that. Does Nash try and put KD in different action? Do they put him somewhere else on the floor? Or will Nash just go, which I'm a little worried about, like, no, he's KD. He'll figure it out. That's what it feels like the game plan is. It's like, it's all right. He might. I mean, would you be all that shocked if KD goes for, you know, 45 in the next game? Probably not, but you may want to try some other things too, because this isn't working against this Celtics defense and the personnel they have.
That's the thing. I think if you're the Celtics, it doesn't really matter, because you're going to live with, if it's Bruce Brown, who started off quite nicely there last night. Seth Curry's kind of weird too. I think he can be much more effective, but he seems to have like a good little spurt and then that's the last you see of him. Obviously, Kyrie, if he has another sort of explosion like he did in the fourth quarter of game one, that's going to help. But, yeah, you're going to try to do whatever you can for Kevin Durant. But, again, if you're running a screen, that other Celtics defender, no matter who it is, and Robert Williams is potentially coming back at some point here as well, it feels like they're capable of at least causing Kevin Durant trouble. You know, there's no weak link on that defense. You know, even Al Horford at his age, he's still coming out. He's covering very, very well. And they're all just getting up in KD's face. And he's like I was saying earlier, he's rushing into those shots because he's like, there's no one here that I can pick on who's got the weakness to slow their defense down. So that's going to be tough. You just have to hope that Kevin Durant gets into that sort of transition or rhythm where it's like, okay, this is before the defense can even have a chance to set up. He can get into some of those threes or slice inside for those little mid-ranges that he can knock down. Because in the half court, it's just working for Boston right now. But it's a fascinating series. I mean, yeah, Brooklyn were you know, a 1 second away from winning game one. They led most of game two here. But Boston has just been the better consistent team in those crucial moments. And that's why they're up 2-0. But, man, that crowd there last night, the atmosphere, that's a tough place to play. Kyrie, I just think, was like, I don't want to be here tonight. Like, he was like, let's just go back to Brooklyn and see if we can get a couple of wins at home.
Yeah, he seemed to be lacking the fight that he had in game one, for sure. And, you know, we even saw the moment where he checked out in the first quarter, I guess, right? Late in the first quarter, I think it was. And you saw one of the assistant coaches clicking, you know, tapping on the watch. You can have, you know, the sun is set here in Boston. You can now get some food. And he came back out. He was eating a banana leaf. Yeah, he must have been pumped.
Very smart. Yes, very, tennis very players eat bananas as well.
So, that's right.
Didn't work though. So
no, no.
You know.
Yeah.
Who it else didn't eats work bananas? On. You got a full list? Basketball players, tennis players.
Yeah, Australian rules football players eat them as well. Joggers do, don't they? Skeety too. I think long distance runners like to have them. So
yes,
I saw actually a runner.
You can almost say athletes.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah,
and humans.
I saw a runner the other. Toddlers love them, yeah.
Yep.
A runner the other day, Skeety, she had 4 water packs as she was running around with. Like,
I thought you were going to say 4 bananas.
No. Like, how do you feel about that? The 4 water packs there? Like, that to me is...
She's probably on a long run, Lee. You got to stay hydrated.
No, I get that. I'm just saying, like, wouldn't that be sort of, like, you know, tough at the start if they're all full with water? Like, Yeah. Seems a little uncomfortable to me, that's all.
Yeah, I don't love running with water, I'll be honest. I'm even trying the old water bottle in the hand. Like, you can get one that, like, straps around your hand. I still even find that a little uncomfortable. But anyway, he was. I'm with you. He did not seem locked into that game.
He didn't want the fight last night. No.
He didn't. And the crowd was great. As you know, that Boston crowd they're loud, and you know, you almost want to give them a little credit for getting back into it. Obviously, in the fourth quarter and the 50-50 balls and stuff like that. Tass, for sure. I think they all sort of go hand in hand. So we'll see what happens in the Clays. In the Barclays Center for game 3. I loved Marcus Smart looking at his left hand when he... I mean, it was a crazy shot. I'll give him that. You know, it was an insane shot. Like the left hand hook in traffic. It iced the game. Game's over. But always find it funny when a professional basketball player is looking at their off hand.
That was nice.
And Tasso, you reminded me too. That was great with a great tweet of one of the worst of the week nominations back in the day.
That that slow-mo replay, though, it looked like the whole Nets defense was there and he just...
Yeah, no, it was nuts.
It was a wild shot.
It was nuts. But this was next level looking at the hand. Yeah. This was, hey, Jalen, take a look at this hand.
Check out this hand.
Look at this hand.
You're going to want to see this thing.
So that was amazing. Also, just back to Nash, who's having a rough series, if we're being honest. Weird challenge by him.
Yeah.
On the Kyrie foul on Tatum with, like, 3:20 to go? Close game, you know, tight. And Tatum hits both. It didn't really matter in the end because that timeout that he would have had, it didn't really come into play, but... Strange challenge on that one.
I think you just trusted Kyrie, honestly. Because Kyrie was like, I got ball first. And he kind of did, but he definitely whacked him across the arm there too. Yeah.
Yeah. That's really all I have on this. You know, it's setting up nicely for the Ben Simmons save us.
Imagine they're down 3-0. Bring Ben Simmons back in a game 4 elimination game. That would be the only thing that could make Ben Simmons saga. Like, even stranger for it to last an entire year, and he comes back for an elimination
it's
game.
True.
It'll happen, probably.
It is weird. It is weird that he would immediately help them just being on defense and dribbling the ball. He would help them so much because of the roster moves they made, as I said, you know, dropping James Johnson. But game three would sort of make sense. I don't know. I don't know if it happens, but it was wild. Yeah, the Nets played three quarters and then just couldn't finish the game out. All these roster moves. I mean, Dragic was their leading scorer at half with 16 points. A guy they picked up off the scrap heap. He made 7 shots in the first half. Called his team out after game one after he tried to inbound it under his hoop and no one came back. And I thought he probably should have got more minutes in the fourth just to be a table setter. Like, this team looked, like I said, a lot like the team against Milwaukee, where they were just kind of walking it up. Like last year, where they didn't have Kyrie and they had half a Harden and they didn't trust Landry Shamet or Javon Carter. And it looked a lot similar. And then Durant. Yeah, Durant did a lot of talking. Kyrie did no talking in this game. If I'm a body language doctor, I think Durant is just, I mean, he's so flustered, so frustrated. If he's talking, like, he was talking a lot to Al Horford, that means he's off. Usually when he talks, he'll say, F off, or something really short, 2 to 3 words. But he was talking a lot yesterday to Al. Like, Al Horford getting out under your skin? Something is not right.
Yeah. Celtics bigs, though, really came through in game two. I'm glad you brought up his name at least there. Al Horford was awesome. 6 of 10. You know, he fouls out in this, but 16 points there, 6 boards. Tice, like you said, 7 of 9 shooting. He had 6 boards. And then Grant Williams with the 17 points, keeping a minute in the first quarter and not missing a shot. Not bad from your 3 bigs there. And you're missing one in Robert Williams, the Time Lord. And yeah, who knows? I mean, there's going to be real no rush to get him back at this point. Like, they're going now to... Well, they're going to Brooklyn for the classic, just got to get one. We get one, and we're feeling pretty good heading back to game 5 for Boston. We'll see if they can do it. Exciting stuff here. Any other thoughts on that game, guys? No, nothing. All right. Well, we got some injury update reports that Devin Booker is going to likely miss games 3 and 4 versus the Pelicans with the hamstring strain. Now, He's out indefinitely. The Suns said it's a mild right hamstring strain. No timetable for his return. So Woj is the one saying he's unlikely to play here in the next 2 games, but he could return during the series. Trey, what's your take on this? This is something we talked about, obviously, yesterday's show. He could miss games 3. Now it sounds like he's going to miss both in New Orleans.
Yeah, if there's any team that can deal with missing a star for a couple of games, I do think it's Phoenix. They've had both Chris Paul and Devin Booker miss a nice little chunk of time during the season, and they did well both of those times. But I do think this is a big deal the further on in the playoffs that the Suns go. They seem like the biggest finals lock heading into the postseason, but now I definitely think they've got some questions. The Pelicans will be tough to beat with just Chris Paul in the backcourt. New Orleans has been playing really well. They've been playing important games for a long time, and they've got a ton of offense. But it seems like the Suns would be able to take that series with a hampered Booker. And if he's out for games 3 and 4, to me, likely it really means that he's out until the Suns are in a dire position. You know, like if they happen to lose game 3, maybe they accelerate a little bit to come back for game 4. But they'll play it pretty safe, at least in round 1. The bigger question will be, when he returns, exactly when he does return, how he looks when he's back, and then also if this hamstring injury lingers at all, because they're going to need him for sure starting in round 2. And then you look at James Harden, he played through a hamstring injury last year. He looked like a one-legged man, and it's still a concern a year later for Harden. So with the Warriors looking like the Warriors, with the Grizzlies having a nice bounce-back victory against the Timberwolves as well, the Timberwolves are even looking okay. Like, they're going to definitely need Devin Booker back to be a title contender once again. The good thing, I suppose, is that they're calling it a mild strain, and it definitely seems like they're going to be using an abundance of caution here with Booker. But it makes things a lot more interesting in the Western Conference, I would say, between the Warriors' start and this Booker injury. The conference finals berth feels more up in the air than it has probably this entire season.
Yeah, I think that's probably fair. I think the Suns, Lee, went 8-6 without Booker this season. So you know, fine, not amazing record, obviously, with the amount of games they won this year. What'd they get to? 64 or something like that. Yeah, what do you think? Are you concerned if you're a Suns fan about him missing these couple of games maybe here in New Orleans?
I think you have to be somewhat concerned because a hamstring tends to be one of those things that needs time rather than you can't rush that back because you're likely then to sort of re-injure it. So he's got to come back when he's 100% healthy. And if that's, you know, two games or four games or whatever, then you're better off, I think, just sitting him out that entire time. Because if he comes back and tears it completely, then you may lose him for the entire playoffs. So tough situation here for the Suns. Huge game, obviously, game three against the Pelicans. Because if they win that, then obviously, worst case scenario, they go back 2-2. They should still win the series. They should be better than the Pelicans overall. But it certainly does make things a lot more interesting because, as we said on yesterday's show, New Orleans won that game with or without Devin Booker anyway yesterday or the day before. They outplayed them, and they're going to be feeling very, very confident. So I'm excited. I mean, it does, you know, it sucks whenever there's an injury, but it sort of does create a little bit more intrigue anyway to see how they handle it, how Phoenix goes from here, and whether or not the Pelicans can just test them and drag them out to a seven-game series here, and who knows. So overall, it's good for the, you know, for the games, but it just sucks, obviously, for the Suns and Booker that he may miss some time here, and hopefully it's not too long.
Yeah, they're saying in the stream team, DC here, Tass, pull pork, not ham.
I like that.
I don't mind it either. It just makes me want to do some pulled pork in the old slow cooker. I might do that this weekend now. Thanks, DC.
Thanks, DC. Yeah, the Suns are definitely hamstrung here, but everybody else is... No, yeah, I shouldn't say excited because it's not. But as Trey said, yeah, the NBA playoffs are in a bit of a flux situation in both conferences. The Bucks lose a home game. I thought that they were the favorite in the Eastern Conference. Obviously, some intrigue there. And then what happens with the Suns, especially if they lose Game 3 in New Orleans? Does that propel Booker to say, okay, I'm coming back Game 4 if they're down 2-1? It's big here in Game 3. I know that everyone is expecting the Suns to pull it out, and Cam Johnson is, I assume, the guy going in the starting lineup and had some big games. When Booker was out, had that monstrous 38-point game, that banker winner, and I assume they'll be fine, but I assume you got to sit him out for both these games. It would be really strange to see him back in Game 4. Even if they are 2-1 down, they should sit him. Because, yeah, they've got some big, big aspirations. But, yeah, for the cash fan, it makes it, yeah, a little bit more intriguing. Unfortunately for Booker, it's not fun. Yeah, pull pork, not ham.
We have four of the series right now, Lee, of the eight, tied 1-1.
Mm.
Not bad, you know?
That's great.
Half of them are split there after two. That's great. Mm-hmm. And then the other ones, of course, 3-0 in the 76ers or Raptors case, and everybody else 2-0 right now. But we'll take a final break. When we come back, we got Tweet of the Night, and we'll look ahead to tonight's action. Three games on. Once again, 40 games and 40 nights continues. Don't go anywhere.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day, or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service that you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
All right, back with the boys here. Start wrapping up today's show. We'll get to tonight's games, make some predictions, things to watch for. But first, Tweet of the Night.
Tweet of the Night. Wow.
Twitter.
Yeah, Tweet of the Night. I've got Tweet of the Night. Somebody got a little cute in the dock overnight because I didn't have Tweet of the Night last night. And, as you know, I have COVID, so I called it an early night last night. I went to bed before 9. I didn't even watch Survivor until this morning. And then Tass slides into the DMs this morning, and he's like, hey, man, you cool with Tweet of the Night? And I'm like, WTF, what? Anyway, so a little scrambling happened, but...
Oh, come on.
Why couldn't you do only... Tweet of the Night, Tass? What was going on?
I'm a Friday Tweet
of
the Night.
Yeah, I hear you, man. I hear you. Sometimes you're just feeling it. That's all.
Things got changed up last week in the rotation, and just because people were in and out. I'm always a Friday Tweet of the Night, man. And don't act, JD, like you do Tweet of the Night the night before. You always do it second before anyway.
That's true. But I needed...
You're just more upset that I couldn't send you a tweet for Tweet of the Night.
Yeah, exactly.
Because I didn't know it was you.
Usually, I get some help, but not today. But that's okay because right there, front and center in my timeline was a tweet from our man Flea, one of the greatest bass players of all time. Now listen, his team not in the playoffs, and so he wasn't tweeting about basketball. He was tweeting about a breakfast mishap, and here it is: just dropped my phone into a plate of scrambled eggs. The eggs got all up in the microphone holes and shit. A couple of things here. Is he having a Jonathan-sized breakfast? Because how many eggs are you having, Flea? Also, put your phone down while you're eating your breakfast, Flea. Don't do what I did this morning, eating my breakfast, scrambling, looking for a tweet. not intended there, scrambled eggs. But, and also, are you throwing the eggs out after you drop your phone into your breakfast?
No way.
Oh, man. I am.
What?
I look at my phone while I'm taking a dump. Like
but it goes everywhere.
But like you're using your phone all day, and then I'm sure you're touching your beard and your mouth. Like it's, I hear you, but I bet I would. I mean, eggs are good, man. You don't get rid of those.
That's true.
Eggs are good. I'm licking them off the bottom of the phone, and probably even trying to suck the morsels out of the microphone holes.
that's too much.
We could be facing an egg shortage right now. There's a bird flu going around. I don't know if you guys heard, but Flea did tweet about basketball last night, so I'll just share this real quick.
Sure.
I don't like the Celtics, Nets, Nuggets, Raptors, Sixers, Jazz, or Mavericks. As a matter of fact, I despise every team that is not the Los Angeles Lakers.
Oh, God. Shut up, Flea. Jesus Christ. What a dumb tweet.
Honestly, respect. Respect. Listen,
he can't even make the freaking play-in team.
And he's sticking with his team. He's sticking with his team. So respect. I mean, in the 80s, they released a song called L.A. Lakers.
Oh, yeah. I thought it was it called?
No, it's called Magic Johnson. Magic Johnson. Yeah, sorry. Showtime.
Great song.
Showtime. Anyways.
Yeah, do you think he's enjoying winning time?
Oh, I can't imagine that he is. I mean,
it's awful. For him.
Yeah. Neither is Jerry West, as it turns out.
Yeah. They're suing them now. They want an apology. Wow.
How do you retract a TV show? That's my question.
Would you, Lee, if you saw Flea in real life, would you drop a homer right to his face?
Yeah, he's from Australia too, Flea. He was born in Sydney,
really?
I think, yeah. So, we'd have some stuff to talk about. I think he'd be better than old Anthony Kiedis when I saw him at the finals. Remember, I tried to get the photo. Me and Trey had the challenge of getting the photo, and Anthony Kiedis was walking past. I said, Anthony, we're talking. I said, hey, listen, man, I do this show for NBA TV. I've got a challenge. I've got to take a photo with a celebrity. I'm not your man. And he walked off.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
That's why I said... that Red Hot Chili Peppers have got shit crowd interaction.
Oh, this it all makes sense now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I said, put your sock on, get down there.
Yeah, you could have asked him to put the sock on. You could have taken a selfie like down by the sock. Yeah.
I would have taken the sock selfie with him for sure. No worries at all. See, I'm prepared. I'm prepared for that, you know?
Yes, so when you say sock selfie, you would get down to the sock as well, the two of you
100%.
In a sock.
100%.
Interesting. I thought Lee was putting his head down by the sock, taking a selfie.
I would have a sock on and only a sock on just to go there with Anthony. Because imagine that when we're doing the TV show and you said, did you pass your challenge? Oh, I'm proud to say, yes, I did. And not only that, here we got the photo. You know, just be like, you know.
Amazing.
All right, well, JD, you killed it with those tweets of the night.
Oh, thanks. Thanks. Yeah. And thank you, Tess, because now I don't have to
Tess,
do it tomorrow.
Hey, Tess, good. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, that was absolutely perfect, JD, because number one, the tweets were a fire. Like a flea soul, they're fire. But also, I screwed up and I blocked Jay in the chat just now. Okay. Or you know, prior to Tweet of the Night, I spent the entire ad break trying to figure out how to unblock somebody, and your entire Tweet of the Night segment trying to figure out how to unblock somebody. And I just did it.
Nice.
Just this
Welcome
second.
Back,
so
Jay.
So perfect.
Jay. I know what
perfectly.
You're wondering. Yes, we are comedians. Yes, Tess is a model. So yeah. You can now drop those comments.
Was that same Jay?
Yeah, oh yeah.
Block him
guaranteed.
Again.
Fucking block him. Get him out of here. So tired of seeing this.
How do I
comments.
Block an unblocked
different
person?
Jay.
I thought it was the same Jay. Wasn't it?
I think we're talking about a Januski versus a
Brzezinski. Oh, oh, Jeremy. No, it was Jeremy.
It is Jeremy.
Yeah, okay, okay. Oh. Good. Keep Jay. Jay's cool.
Jay is good.
Jay can stay.
All right.
I'm not going to unblock Jeremy because then Jeremy will speak in class again.
Oh,
speak in the chat again.
Oh, nice.
Now we're talking about old. Yeah.
Okay. Tonight's games. We got Grizzlies Wolves with the 7:30 tip. Hey, they got it on TNT. That's nice to see. That series tied at one game apiece in Minnesota. The Target Center is going to be going crazy. We got Mavs Jazz at 9 on NBA TV. That series also tied at 1-1. And then Warriors Nuggets is the late game where the Warriors will look to take a 3-0 lead. We'll see what the Denver Nuggets and Jokic can do and see if they can make it a series at the very least. Though a lot of people are not convinced after the first two games that that'll be the case. Yeah, who wants to tackle this first? Any predictions, thoughts, things to watch for? Have at it.
How about a big line from Nikola Jokic? That's what I'm expecting tonight. I don't know if it means a win for the Nuggets, but a 40-point game coming from the presumptive MVP.
Okay. All right.
It's, and a new haircut. A new haircut from Jokic, too. Looks a lot better between game two
really?
And game three.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I can't wait to see that tonight.
Nice.
Tass, what do you which game are you most excited for, I guess, is a fair question.
Yeah. Well, I'm most excited for Minnesota-Memphis, just to see how the Grizzlies respond after winning a game this time. So I think the first quarter is so key in this particular series. I will say one more addition I want to make to the nickname possibilities for the death lineup. Just one more.
Okay.
Pool and the Gang from No Dunks Anupam. No Dunks fan Anupam. I know it's
Pool and
you
the
know
gang?
It excludes everybody else. It's just Pool. It's like a little too much emphasis on the new guy.
Right.
But this is a new version. This is an entirely new version, and we kind of forget who was part of these original ones. So it's like there was Big Three plus Iggy and Harrison Barnes to start the death lineup. Then it was Big Three plus Iggy plus Durant. And so now I think you kind of need a new nickname. That's why I'm stomping for Pool and the Gang. It's the Big Three plus Pool plus Wiggins, which you leave out, which is also funny. I love Wiggins, but you know, and I think the Wiggins thing, that can float. That can change. That could be Otto Porter. I think that could come in, even a Bielitsa, or back to Iggy. So I kind of like Poole in the Gang.
That's giving too much credit to Poole.
Yeah, for sure.
With for sure. Hall of Famer Steph Curry and Clay and Draymond there. But okay, I mean, it's unique. It's different. The one I'm seeing people running with is a Death Star lineup, Lely. So they're taking the Death lineup, turning it into a Star Wars vibes there. I don't know. Maybe JD wants to get back on here and chime in on that. Yeah, they had Death Star. I don't know.
Hey, nothing Darth. The Darth Warriors. Yeah.
We can just leave it alone. It'll come, whatever happens.
They've played 11 minutes together. This is my favorite part. Yeah. We got to get a lineup, babe.
The Grateful Death lineup. They're based out of San Francisco. The lineups keep changing. They've only played 11 minutes, which is the average length of a Grateful Dead song.
Okay, I like it.
Maybe it works.
Grateful Death lineup. That's not bad, actually. It's better than half the other ones I've heard. Lee, what are you watching for here tonight with these three games?
Well, I am really interested in the Grizzlies-Wolves series as well. Really not sure which way that one's going to go. I expect better performance from Minnesota in Game 3. They were pretty bad, and so we'll see. Ja Morant and the boys look like they're back in Game 2, but different story now. You know Pat Beverly's going to be fired up for this one on his home court. And also, honestly, it's a must-win for the Jazz tonight at home. It really is. It is.
If they
lose this game without Doncic, I'm almost certain he's not playing this game. Maybe he's back for game four there. They can't afford to be down in the series. They've stolen home court. They must confirm that advantage tonight. We'll see what happens. That's the weirdest series, I think. It's like, man, the Jazz have to win this series. Surely, don't they?
Okay. So Lili is on record saying Jazz have to win. Game 3 here at home tonight, or they're in trouble in that series. I actually probably agree with you. Very excited for Grizzlies-Wolves. We got to see a big Towns game here. He's got at least an imprint on the game. He was made to really look invisible again in Game 2, like we had seen in the play-in. So he's got to bounce back. I'm excited to see what happens in that one. We'll be back here tomorrow morning to break it all down. Well, some of us will. Our guy, Trey Kirby, won't be joining us for the Drop podcast because this guy is headed to Chicago for his own Game 3 with the boys. What are you doing tonight in Chicago? Any plans?
My sister just moved into a new house, so I'm going to go see her new house, spend some time with mom and sis, and then with the bros on Friday, family on Saturday, the bros for the Bulls again on Sunday. I think they got a noon start on Sunday. So.
You're going to both games?
Well, I'm only going to Game 3 as of right now, but we'll see how things go Friday night, you know. I don't know. If the Bulls shock the world again, I could be enticed for a Sunday afternoon affair.
Wow. When's your flight home? Or are you coming on Monday or
late,
Sunday?
Late. I got like a 9 o'clock flight.
Okay. Sunday, so you could get it in. Yeah. Okay. Wow. Awesome. We'll see. Didn't realize that was in play. Well, anyway, keep an eye for Trey Kirby. With your DVR, make sure you pause the crowd. See if you can find the big bearded one out there.
Yeah, we're off an angle to the right of the hoop. We were like, should we sit in the Thunderstick zone? We could have sat like right behind the basket, which would have been cool, but you know, for only half the game, pretty much. So
yeah, it's not the.
It's a possibility. I hope you'll at least pause it and check.
Oh, well, you know Tass is going to give it a go. Apparently, Matt Austin does it too. Yeah, so I'll try it as well. All right. It's, in fact, $5 to who the first person that can find Trey Kirby in the crowd. Okay, guys, join us tomorrow, 10 a.m. Eastern, live here for the Drop podcast. You can join us on YouTube, obviously turn it into a podcast. And if you're a Survivor fan, join JD, myself, and Tass filling in for Trey this week to recap last night's episode, episode 8 of Survivor 42. So that's on No Buffs. It's got its own YouTube feed, own podcast feed. So if you're a Survivor sicko like we are, join us for that. I think we're bumping up our start time around 2 p.m. Eastern here is the plan. I think Tass still has to watch it, though, like you said. So
I'll get it in.
We better wrap this up. Email in your NBA questions to nodunks@theathletic.com. Follow us across all the social media channels at No Dunks Inc. Get yourself an athletic subscription. Go to theathletic.com/nodunks, and we'll see you later for No Buffs. And if you're not a Survivor fan, we'll see you tomorrow morning. Until then, Clipper Bros.
You heard it here first. Have a great time. Turn up. Love you guys. Awesome.
Thanks for joining us. And remember, the Death Star at Disney is something to see. If that's what I saw, I think I did see the Death Star. Anyways, the Star Wars exhibit at Epcot at Disney. Whoa! Life-changing, if that's what I saw. Honestly...
He's not sure that's what he saw.
It is amazing.
Embrace the day, people. And I'd be happy every minute. It's been so long, but you're the one I've waited for. It's happened already. It's gonna be groovy. Ooh.
Ooh.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.